Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Keeper Cut Podcast, a podcast brought to you by the Pitcherless Podcast Network. I'm Pete Ball, your host today. For episode 184, I'm not joined by Chad Young. Chad is traveling right now. He's trying to keep up with our Listener League draft. He's traveling. He's busy. Today, I'm going to come at you with a recap of the first 10 rounds of Keeper Cut Listener League 1. So in our last episode, we were breaking down Keeper Cut Listener League 2. That's a head-to-head league with minor league spots, 9 keepers, round-based keepers. Been going on, I think this is going into year 5. This league is very different. It is fab, like Keeper Cut Listener League 2, but there's no minor league teams. It's Roto, which is different from the head-to-head categories. The categories themselves are not traditional 5x5. We replaced average with OBP, and we replaced wins with innings pitched. So there's a few nuanced differences between these two leagues, but the Roto League otherwise is pretty straightforward. And with it also being in year 5, as you'll see as this draft went on, it got pretty difficult. The inflation really took its toll. You had guys like, you know, we'll get into it, but guys like Dylan Crews and Taylor Ward going in round 5, which you're just not used to in, obviously, redraft format. So we're going to break down round by round, and I'm just going to give you my favorite pick of that round and my least favorite pick of that round. I tried to pass around my least favorite pick. Like, I wanted to be true. I didn't want to, like, share what wasn't my opinion, but I didn't want anyone to feel like I was targeting them. I know I gave myself my least favorite pick of a round twice to try and be fair, but let's get into it. I'm sure my rationale will hopefully make sense for why I picked each favorite and each not favorite, or each least favorite. So in round 1, the first pick was Shohei Ohtani, then Aaron Judge, Juan Soto, Bobby Witt Jr. went 4th, Jose Ramirez 5th, Fernando Tatis Jr. 6th, Kyle Tucker 7th, Jazz Chisholm 8th, Kyle Schwarber 9th, Vlad Guerrero Jr. 10th, Francisco Lindor 11th, and Matt Olson went 12th. So you can obviously see by the end of that round, you know, the inflation is already kind of taking a toll here. Like, you don't see, for example, those top three, that three-headed monster of starters at the top of drafts in Garrett Crochet, Paul Skeens, and Tarek Skubal, all three of them were kept. So the first round is thinner than it normally is, and it only gets worse as the draft goes on. But I think my favorite pick of this round was actually Jose Ramirez at 5. So, I mean, it's easy to say that whoever you take 5th overall is probably going to be pretty good, right? And Jose Ramirez is. But I think you're actually kind of getting him at a discount, even at pick 5. Last year, Jose Ramirez finished 6th on the Razzball Player Rater for 5x5 OBP leagues, behind only Judge, Raleigh, Ohtani, Soto, and Schwarber. Witt went in front of him. And as good as Witt is, he finished 12th in that format last year. So that's still a really awesome player to have. And it helps, obviously, with stolen bases as well. Jose Ramirez was better than him last year. And that's a plate discipline thing. This is an OBP league. And I don't really expect that to change. So Chad was able to get a little bit of a discount, like maybe a one-pick discount, which isn't meaningless, on Jose Ramirez here in the first round. And maybe more importantly, he went into the draft. This is a 9-keeper league, like I said. He went into the draft with no third baseman. Now here in the first round, he's locking up the best third baseman at maybe a pick's worth of a discount. It's hard to do best pick in the first round, and I'm certainly not saying Bobby Witt Jr. is a bad pick there. But when I see that, I think I'd rather have Ramirez. So Ramirez gets best pick of the first round. And I'm going to go ahead and give myself, sadly, the worst pick of round 1. I mean, I can defend it pretty easily. It's not like I have any regret here, but that worst pick was Matt Olson at 12. So the last pick in the first round, there's a pretty big drop-off in terms of ADP after Lindor. Yamamoto was there, but I already had 4 starters, and this is a 5-starter weekly format. So if I took Yamamoto, I'm already done with starting pitchers, essentially. Like, as you'll see, I took more. I took a 6th and 7th starter. I won't be able to start all of those guys every week, but it's not bad to have depth. It just felt doing that this early in the draft wasn't very advantageous. Plus, out of my 9 keepers, I only kept 3 hitters. Now, I expect a lot out of two of them anyway. Two of those three are Corbin Carroll and Roman Anthony, who I have great prices on, and the third being Samuel Basayo. But I really needed to go two bats here. When you look at the first round, like Olsen, he looks out of place based on 2025 numbers. He did finish 13th in baseball last year in on-base percentage, and this is an OBP league. You're going to hear me reference that a lot. And that was despite like having a quote down year, right? Like we view Matt Olson as having a down year last year, 13th in baseball and OBP. The only hitters to go in front of him in this draft who had better OBPs were Judge, Soto, Otani, Vlad, Tucker, and Tatis Jr. So Olson had a better OBP than Lindor, a better OBP than Jazz Chisholm, so on and so forth. Not that that's the only category, but this is a guy who's hit 50 homers before, and he's not like old. So with the Braves, you know, the Braves are finally healthy. I'm expecting a nice bounce back from Olson as an overall package, especially when considering 2025. He doesn't stand out. He definitely looks like the worst pick here. Maybe you could make a case for Jazz, but Jazz did have a surprisingly solid OBP in 2025, and he's got that dual position eligibility at two pretty tough positions. So I think Olson was the worst pick in the first round, but for my team, it made sense. And I was able to get Olson and Yordan Alvarez back-to-back there, drastically increasing the power ceiling for my team, which I really needed to do early in this draft. So for round two, for best pick, well, let's go through the round first. As I mentioned, I took Yordan Alvarez first, then Yamamoto went, then Manny Machado third, Pete Alonso fourth, Rafael Devers fifth, Trey Turner sixth, Mookie Betts went 7th, Logan Webb went 8th, Bryce Harper 9th, Randy Arozarena 10th, Andrés Muñoz went 11th, and Max Fried 12th. Now keep in mind, some of these guys as we go through this draft were keepers. I don't think there were any keepers in the second round. I could be wrong on that. I'd have to double check. But we're eventually going to get to a point. Like next round, Logan Gilbert went as the second pick in the third round, he was a keeper. So just keep that in mind that some of these are going to stick out as like, whoa, how did that guy fall that far? It's not that he fell. He was a keeper. My favorite pick in round two was Yamamoto. It made so much sense for the team that took him. So that was Chocolate Rain. Yamamoto was just so far and away the best available starting pitcher. There's not much more to be said. The next starting pitcher that went was Logan Webb, who, as good as he was, you know, had an ERA almost a full run higher than Yamamoto, a whip so much worse. Logan Webb had a whip of 1.24. Yamamoto's was 0.99. And Webb is way less effective per inning for strikeouts. So Yamamoto's easily the superior pitcher on the board. Chocolate Rain only kept Merrill Kelly and Andrew Abbott for pitchers. So he somehow not only landed Francisco Lindor in the first round, but then he was able to loop around and grab the best pitcher on the board in the second round, which he desperately needed, right? Because if he waited again, Yamamoto would have been gone. Logan Webb, Max Fried, Blake Snell goes. I think Dylan Cease was a keeper, but either way, he's not on the board. If he waited another round to take a pitcher, he'd be looking at like Freddy Peralta or Framber Valdez. So he ended up taking Freddy Peralta anyway, so maybe he would have been looking at Framber Valdez. I would want Yamamoto in that situation. It's a nice job by Chocolate Rain there in round two. My least favorite pick, and again, I'm going to feel like I need to apologize every time. I don't actually think this is like a bad pick. It's just my least favorite pick of round two was Randy Arozarena, 10th pick, second round by Team Gavin. This was not some like terrible pick. I've just never been a Randy guy. He's coming off what was probably his best season ever. But the OPS was 679 in the second half after 820 in the first half. The OBP went from 357 in the first half to 303 in the second half. This is Roto. All that matters is the final numbers. I'm just not sure I want to buy in on a career year for Randy Arozarena. The walk rate took a noticeable dip while the K percentage was his worst since 2021. Despite the career high in stolen bases, he posted his lowest sprint speed, which was also his age 30 season, so I don't expect that, you know, him to get any quicker. Now, sprint speed and stolen bases are not a direct correlation, and the Mariners seem to run a lot. Ask Josh Naylor. I just see a lot of ways it could go wrong for Randy, but in a five outfielder league, it's hard to pass up on a guy who he was three home runs away from 30-30. So, like, I get it. I wouldn't have made the pick, but I understand it. That takes us to round three. The first pick in round three was Blake Snell. Logan Gilbert, again, was a keeper. We had Austin Riley, William Contreras, Josh Hader went there to Chad 5th, Will Smith 6th, Dylan Cease 7th, Freddie Freeman went as the 8th pick in the 3rd round, George Springer 9th, Juan Duran went 10th, I think he was a keeper as well, actually. Ketel Marte was a keeper and was 11th in that round, and then I took Alex Bregman as the last pick of the 3rd round. Pretty ho-hum round, not a lot of hot takes to be had here. I think my favorite pick, it's kind of hard to decide, but Freddie Freeman. This early in the draft, age shouldn't be a concern for you. Like, no matter who you take in this particular league, the inflation is 2 rounds. So Freddie Freeman will cost a first round pick next year. If he took a young player, they would cost a first round pick next year. That's just what the rules are. So most likely, regardless of age, they're not going to be worth keeping. So I'm not worried about that. Freeman didn't score quite as well as you might think on the player radar in 2025, despite an 11th best in baseball, 367 OBP. He finished 44th among all hitters and only 9th among first basemen. Razzball does count Bellinger as first base, so if you want to say 8th overall, fine, but still not what you'd expect. But he's really been the model of consistency, man, for like his entire Hall of Fame career. He's aging really well. The average bat speed is not elite, but it also has barely changed since that data started getting tracked in 2023, and like he's been elite pretty much for that time. He's been good to give you basically something in stolen bases for 5 years in a row, had his highest max exit velocity since 2016, and he's now added Kyle Tucker to the lineup, and he's still going to bat in the middle of that ridiculous lineup. So I feel like he's going to age pretty well. Now, to be fair, and he has aged well so far, to be fair, though, worst K rate since 2016, worst walk rate of his career, lowest X WOBA, lowest X slugging, and lowest X batting average of his career. With that said, each of those numbers were still really good. Like, you can go look at the, like, they're still fine. They're not like, he's not like tanking his numbers and about to fall apart. At least I don't think he is. They're just not great compared to the rest of his Hall of Fame career. Maybe this is the year it takes a big dip. I don't know. It could be like the way it went for Goldschmidt. He went from, like, you know, winning an MVP for the Cardinals to, it almost felt like in the blink of an eye he wasn't useful at all anymore. But I'm willing to take the gamble here. I feel like the plate skills are still so good. The on-base is still so good. And he's being added here to grumpy old man's roster. I should have said that earlier. I forgot. Sorry. As his corner infielder. I think that's great. I mean, Devers at first, Freeman at corner infield. You got that locked up now. Least favorite pick of the 3rd round, man. If I'm like out of breath, I'm not used to talking this much on the podcast. I have no idea what the minute marker is because I'm looking at my computer screen. I'm doing the best I can here. I'm going to go with Will Smith. Catcher's just deep. It's just deep. Smith posted, and that was the Snohomish Salmon that took Will Smith. Smith posted an insane 404 OBP in 2025 to go along with a career best walk rate, 14.7%. Best average exit velocity, 91.3 miles an hour. So, like, under the hood, if you disregard the shortened 2020 season, it was Smith's best season ever. He was great, and all the way great through the playoffs. On the surface, though, it was fine. He missed time due to a hairline fracture in his hand, so he only played 110 games. Obviously, he was great in the playoffs, like I said, but we have to start accounting for the fact that he's now entering his age 31 season as a backstop. As a result of the shortened time, he accumulated 17 homers, 61 RBI, 64 runs, and just 2 stolen bases. I'm not going to name some of the names that are still on the board. We're currently in round 17, just out of respect for the draft process. I don't know when this is, you know, what round we're going to be in when this airs, so, you know, I don't want to start spilling beans here, but I can tell you there are at least 4 names I'd rather have in round 17 as my catcher. This is a single catcher league, than taking Will Smith in round 3. And that doesn't account for guys already drafted, like Kirk in round 14 or this one, Adley in round 13. Like, there's no question I would much rather have Adley Rutschman in the 13th round in a single catcher league, especially an OBP league, than Will Smith in the 3rd round. And I got to be clear, I'm not saying Adley's going to be better than Will Smith, but I'm saying I would rather bank that 10-round difference. Maybe, you know, the salmon here thought a cliff was coming for catchers only. Salvador Perez, it looks like, was taken between Will Smith at pick 6 in the 3rd round and Yiner Diaz in pick 9th of the 12th round. So that was the only one that went in between that was Salvador Perez. I just don't think Smith is that much better than those other guys. And I think there's a reason why that chasm was there, right? Like, people just feel like they can wait on catcher. But anyway, you should still be happy with what Will Smith gives you. Based on the position, I don't think I need to jump in there in a single catcher. So then we get to round 4. We've got me taking Corey Seager with the first pick in the 4th round. So, like, I'm really, I'm a man of my word, people. I tell you, I don't care about injuries. I'm tired of caring about injuries. Everybody thinks they're freaking Nostradamus. Like, oh, well, this guy's going to get injured and that guy's not going to get injured. I don't care anymore. I can't do it. It drives me crazy. Whenever we think a guy is like rock solid and can't get hurt, he gets hurt. Like, they're professional athletes. They're playing a very twitchy game. Like, they get hurt. You can't control it. So I have Corey Seager. I have Yordan Alvarez. I have Zach Wheeler. I have Sandy Alcantara coming off Tommy John. Like, there might even be a handful of other guys here that are just always. I mean, I took Chase DeLauder. You know, Hunter Green was hurt last year. Corbin Carroll had his shoulder issues a few years ago. Cole Reagans was one of my keepers. I mean, like, yes, I have a lot of injury risk. I don't even know what that means anymore. And I find those conversations so boring. Like, yes, well, he was hurt last year. He could get hurt again. Thank you. Got it. Okay. Is he hurt right now? Because if the answer is no, I'm not really worried about it. Can't control that. Going to take the player that's the best player. And in my mind, for my team, I thought that was Corey Seager in that moment. Anyway, now that I got that off my chest, Seager was the first pick. Freddie Peralta, 2nd. Framber Valdez, 3rd. Seiya Suzuki, 4th. Brandon Nimmo, 5th. Eugenio Suarez, 6th. That was, I think, before Suarez signed with Cincinnati, so kind of got bailed out there. Not that Suarez would be a bad pick in third basis then, but he could be a great pick now. Cody Bellinger, 7th. Zach Neto was one of Chad's keepers. I know that one at pick 8. Joe Ryan, pick 9 in the 4th round. O'Neill Cruz, the 10th pick in the 4th round. Bryce Terang, 11th. Bo Bichette, 12th. Favorite pick of that round. I'm going to go with Seiya Suzuki, who went 4th that round to Roshar Radiance. Seiya was awesome in his 4th big league season. I mean, he really was. His OBP was 326. That's substantially lower than his 346 career average. I think that could be explained by the BABIP. His BABIP's by year since 2022, 326, 341, 370, and then 282 last year. That could be due to him trying to lift the ball more, but I also wouldn't be upset with that. He posted a by far career high 24.3% pulled air rate, which resulted in a career high 32 homers. So, like, be careful what you wish for. Wherever he's putting that energy to lift and pull the ball or to hit for a higher BABIP, like, I think you're going to benefit from it either way. I think he could maybe continue to lift and pull and still get a little bit luckier when it comes to BABIP. He eclipsed 100 RBI for the first time. He posted his 3rd straight season of an OPS over 800 despite the bad BABIP luck. Tucker's gone, but Bregman's in, you know, and Bregman has elite on base skills in front of him. I kind of expect outfield 1 level production out of Seiya in 2026. Like, if you're one of the guys who doesn't get an elite round 1 outfielder, you know, like a Judge, a Soto, Tatis, Tucker, whatever it is, Acuna, I mean, there's so many, Carroll, on and on and on. If you somehow miss out on those guys because you took Skubal or you took, you know, Jazz Chisholm or whatever it is, not that Jazz is necessarily going in the 1st round, you get what I'm saying. I think Seiya is a great outfield 1, and I really, really like that pick here. Least favorite, I wanted to say O'Neill Cruz, but I don't know. I couldn't bring myself to do it. Like, his walk rate was insane last year, like in a good way. So I'm not saying he's going to have a good OBP, even with a great walk rate last year. His OBP was under 300. But that walk rate snuck up to almost 12%. So he's still so toolsy. He hits the ball so freaking hard. He's so fast. Like, bottom line, if he hurts you in OBP, the lineup got better. which means hopefully he's giving you more runs in RBI than he did last year, because that was brutal. But he hit 20 homers and almost stole 40 bags last year. So, like, I'm not gonna pick O'Neill Cruz here. I'll give it one more year before I pick O'Neill Cruz here as the worst pick in this round. It is a five outfielder league. You need to find stolen bases. I had a hell of a time trying to find stolen bases, as we'll see in the next round. So I didn't end up choosing O'Neill Cruz. But now I feel bad because I'm going to go with a player like I feel fine about, and that's Brandon Nimmo to Grumpy Old Man. Grumpy Old Man, if that's his team name, I'm not being rude. Took him as the fifth pick in the fourth round right after Seiya. Now, who knows? Maybe he was like, oh, sweet, I'm going to get Seiya Suzuki, and then had to settle for Nimmo because he was committed to an outfielder there. I don't know. Nimmo should be fine in 2026, though. He was 50th among all hitters in 5x5 Roto with OBP instead of average last season. Although he's going to a lineup downgrade, as well as potentially a park downgrade for left-handed batters, it's kind of like a dead heat between Globe Life and Citi Field. Actually, Globe Life might slightly be better for left-handed power, so maybe it's a tiny upgrade. I don't think it's negligible. It's not a big deal. He's been about as consistent as you can be in terms of fantasy production over the last 3 to 4 seasons, with recent serious gains in RBI and stolen base production, but obviously RBI is very lineup dependent. With that said, like, he's entering his age 33 season. He seems to walk a fine line between being a really solid, like, outfield 2/3 and an outfield 5, right? Because if he loses the power at all, if the stolen bases go back down, the lineup's not that great. Like, I could see him being a lower floor than we might think. This early in the draft, not sure that's what I want. His walk rate plummeted last year to 7.7% after having double-digit walk rates literally his entire career since 2017. He hardly pulls the ball in the air. He's not particularly quick. Drafting him successfully here kind of fully depends on him staying healthy and staying at the top of that Rangers lineup, which he could do two of those things. He's usually pretty reliable, and I don't know why they would take him off the leadoff spot based on that lineup. I just think I'd rather roll the dice on a higher upside play. So it was a tough call, but I guess I got to pick somebody. I'm going to go with Nimmo. My apologies to Grumpy Old Man. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll do rounds 5 through 10. All right, folks, welcome back. Keeper Cut Podcast, Pete Ball, no Chad Young today. Chad's traveling. We're breaking down the Keeper Cut Listener League number one, which is a roto league. It's 5x5. Instead of OBP, instead of batting average, we have OBP. And instead of wins, we do innings pitched. It is a weekly league with FAB, 9 keepers. And we're doing my favorite pick and my least favorite pick of each of the first 10 rounds. We are still drafting, so I'm not going to reference players that haven't been drafted yet, although I can't really imagine why that would come up anyway. So, fifth round. My favorite pick. Actually, nope, let's go through the round again. Salvador Perez went first. Jeremy Peña went second. Dylan Cruz went third. Nick Pivetta, fourth. Taylor Ward, fifth. Riley Green, sixth. Ian Happ went seventh. Christian Yelich, eighth. Willy Adames, ninth. Brian Wu was a keeper, definitely, at the 10th pick. Ryan Helsley, 11th. And Stephen Kwan, I took at pick 12. So there definitely were a few keepers in there, at least Riley Green and Brian Wu. So my favorite pick, again, I can't pick a keeper here. That would be dumb. Of that round is from Manfred's Clown Posse. He took Ian Happ, 7th pick of that round. Again, we're talking round 5. It kind of feels like talking out of both sides of my mouth because Happ and Nimmo seem kind of similar. Happ is 2 years younger than Nimmo, and he's going around later, so there's that. He's very similar, perhaps more upside. He's not having a change of scenery. He doesn't have that concern. There's no random serious dip in his walk rate. His walk rate's actually outstanding. He's got a better lineup around him. I think that's for sure. It feels like Happ's just kind of like a set it and forget it for an on-base percentage of at least 340 and 20 to 25 homers, 80 to 85 RBI, 85 to 90 runs, and a handful of steals. He only had 6 in 2025, but before that he had 14 and 13 in 2023 and 2024 respectively. So, you know, could those stolen bases come back? I wouldn't be surprised. I don't think anybody should be surprised. Maybe don't bank on that number, but it could be there. So, it's nitpicking, right? Saying Ian Happ's my favorite pick of round 5 and Brandon Nimmo's my least favorite pick of round 4 because they're not that different, but I think I like that round discount on Nimmo or on Happ enough to put him there. All right, so that means we are on to my least favorite pick of round five, and I have to give that to myself. I took Dylan Cruz as the third pick in the fifth round. I had an extra pick in this round. I'd made a trade just shortly before the keeper deadline to acquire this pick. But, I can justify it. I mean, like, talk about paying the iron price for stolen bases, but, like, I needed stolen bases. Ultimately, that's what this was about. I kept Corbin Carroll, but otherwise had no real base dealers on the team yet. I mentioned I took Olsen and Alvarez in rounds one and two. I also filled my shortstop spot, normally a solid spot for stolen bases, with Corey Seager, who I'd be lucky to get two stolen bases out of. So, you know, that I've set myself up in a position where I have to pay up for stolen bases. They're flying off the board. So, you know what? I reached my outfield three. I reached my outfield four, who ended up being Steven Kwan at the end of the round. But by the end of that round, if those guys stay healthy, I've probably added like 50 stolen bases to my total, which is not nothing. The pick could be a train wreck. But he's a former top prospect, 23 years old, should be able to stay on the field, hopefully. If he's able to, he'll hurt my OBP, but I've built up a really strong base in OBP. Forget about my keepers for a second who have high OBP upside in Roman Anthony, Samuel Basayo, and Corbin Carroll. I also took Matt Olson and Yordan Alvarez in rounds one and two. I took Corey Seager and Alex Bregman in rounds three and four. I have a lot of like OBP wiggle room here to take on a player like Dylan Cruz, who could be an OBP, you know, downgrade, but it won't hurt me too much, and I'll get those stolen bases. So not a perfect pick, but with context, I think that helps my case out just a little bit. All right, so that brings us halfway through. I think we can do a quick little recap here. In round one, my favorite pick was Jose Ramirez to Chad. My least favorite pick was Matt Olson to myself. In round two, my favorite pick was Yoshinobu Yamamoto to Chocolate Rain. My least favorite pick was Randy Arozarena to Team Gavin. In round three, favorite pick, Freddie Freeman. Least, and that was to Grumpy Old Man. Least favorite pick was Will Smith to Snohomish Salmon. In round four, my favorite pick was Seiya Suzuki to Roshar Radiance. In round four, my least favorite pick was Brandon Nimmo to Grumpy Old Man. And then finally, in round five, my favorite pick of round five was, I don't know how I just lost this, Ian Happ. And my least favorite pick was to myself, Dylan Cruz. Be a little hard on myself here. That takes us to round six. Round six of this draft, we had first pick of the sixth round, Sandy Alcantara to myself. Again, it's an innings pitched league, so pretty excited about that one. He's my fifth starter. Matt Chapman, second. Teoscar Hernandez, third. Raisel Iglesias, fourth. Pablo Lopez, fifth. Mike Trout, sixth. Tatsuya Imai, I don't know why that just confused me so much. Seventh. Jurickson Profar, eighth. Jose Altuve, ninth. Emmett Sheehan, tenth. Julio Rodriguez was a keeper for sure at pick 11. And Nico Horner, 12th. Let's start with my favorite pick again. My favorite pick of that round was Jose Altuve going to Acuña Matata with the ninth pick in the sixth round. And frankly, I am tired of the Altuve slandering this draft season. Like, second base is bad, and Altuve is a Hall of Fame level talent. So, like, good for you, Acuña Matata, for locking him up. He may age better than people seem to assume he will. Like, he's a unique talent. And if all you're doing is looking at his Statcast sliders and going, oh, well, he's not good anymore, then please understand that he was winning MVP awards with bad exit velocities and low-ish walk rates. I think he actually only got one MVP award, and Yankee fans think he stole it anyway. But regardless, Jose Altuve has been incredible his entire career, and he's done that with low exit velocities, okay? And not great walk rates despite having that tiny strike zone. He will continue to abuse the Crawford boxes. He has dual position eligibility at second base and outfield in most formats. He clubbed 26 home runs last year. 26! Only Brandon Lowe, Ketel Marte, and Jazz Chisholm at second base had more homers. Altuve managed to still contribute double-digit steals and 80 runs as well. His 77 RBI were fifth best at the position. I understand you don't want to be the one left holding the bag. I get that. And if you're just afraid of things like that, then you're never going to have him, and you're also going to miss out on seasons where he just continues to do this, or when Freddie Freeman just continues to do this, or, insert any player that continues to perform well into their mid-30s. I also kind of feel like that's baked into his cost here, right? Like, he was pretty easily a top five second baseman based on what I just provided, I'd assume, last year. And yet, with second baseman as thin as it is and with so much inflation in this keeper league, he's still not going till the sixth round. I like Jose Altuve. I think that was a good pick here. My least favorite pick in the sixth round is definitely Teoscar Hernandez. So Teoscar Hernandez was taken by T-Money Show. And I'm actually in on Teoscar in regular 5x5 leagues. Well, I definitely was before the Tucker signing. I'll probably still, if he falls too far, then I'll probably still have some interest. But this is an OBP league. Teoscar has actively hurt you in OBP leagues in two of the last three seasons. And he was a pretty good performer in two of those, right? Well, at least in one of them. I don't anticipate a big change there. He just posted the worst walk rate of his career at 4.8%. That's horrible. With Tucker in the fold, playtime could become a concern. The Dodgers have a million outfield prospects. They have DH all locked up with Otani. Like, this isn't an ideal position to find himself in, Teoscar, and it will impact his spot in the lineup. I don't think Roster Resource quite knows how to do the Dodgers just yet, and I don't blame them. You know, how do they want to spread out their lefties and still stack the top of their lineup? I don't know. That's for Dave Roberts to figure out. But I think Teoscar is going to move down, and if he's in the bottom third of that lineup and his OBP is bad and he's getting older, I just can't see myself ultimately taking him over Mike Trout in an OBP league, and Trout ended up going two picks later. And that is considering all of Trout's injury concerns and everything else. So Teoscar, you know, I would have let him drop a few more rounds before taking him, because I bet I would have been able to get him if I really wanted him. I don't think people would have been all over Teoscar. Round seven, we had a lot of closers. Trevor McGill, Tyler Glasnow in second, Danny Palencia third, Nick Lodolo fourth, Dansby Swanson fifth, Ryan Pepiot may have been a keeper, I can't remember, went sixth, Sedan Rafaela seventh, Kevin Gausman eighth, Mason Miller was definitely a keeper with the ninth pick in the seventh round, Bryson Stott went 10th, Pete Fairbanks went 11th, and Zach Wheeler went 12th. So I've been pretty hard on myself so far, so I'm going to give myself my favorite pick here, mostly because this round was wildly unexciting. And although I would maybe choose Tyler Glasnow, this league counts innings pitched, and I just don't know how reliable Glasnow is going to be in that format. So I'm going to go with Wheeler, which was my pick. And context really matters here. This round for me wasn't I have to have a slam dunk pick here. I had an extra pick up until this point. I'd made a pick in every round so far, and I had two picks in round five when I took that Cruz-Kwan combo. So my roster was filling up. I'd just taken my fifth starting pitcher, so I could afford to take on some more risk at starting pitcher, because I already have my, you know, it's a weekly league with five starting pitcher slots, and I already have those filled up. So anything from here is just depth and, you know, making sure I have guys to fill in when a guy has to miss a start or whatever it might be. So why not build that depth with one of the best pitchers in baseball over the last 5 years? Maybe the best pitcher over the last 5 years. I don't know. If he comes back and he's a disaster, I still have six really solid starting pitchers, because with my next pick, I took Gavin Williams, which if Gavin Williams turns into a keeper, it was important to take him second out of him and Wheeler, because he's much younger. Even if I get to keep Wheeler, it's only going to be like probably one more year. Gavin Williams could be an ace for a long time with that fastball. So I wanted to bake in a discount for him over a discount for Wheeler. And honestly, if Wheeler just comes back and is elite again, he's a keeper no matter what. It doesn't really matter, you know, if he costs me a fifth rounder or a sixth rounder. If he comes back and he's not an ace again, I have plenty of starters. I have Gavin Williams as my sixth starter. My other five starters, just to clarify, because I realize now I haven't said that, Cole Reagans, Hunter Green, Yuri Perez, Chase Burns, Sandy Alcantara, and then I added Zach Wheeler and I added Gavin Williams. Yes, there's risk there. Newsflash, there is risk with every single rotation. So Don't really care. I think that's going to be an elite pitching staff. And it has, like, best pitching staff in the league upside if Wheeler does, in fact, bounce back from this injury. My least favorite pick of this round, I have to go with Sedan Rafaela from the Manfred's Clown Posse. I feel like I've mentioned him before, that team. I hope I didn't pick you as my – no, I pick you as my favorite pick in the fifth round there for Ian Happ, so I can bring you down a little bit here. I imagine this was a plea for steals, right? Like I mentioned before, stolen bases are getting thin. Thing is, Rafael could be a real killer in OBP. I mean, he has yet to post a walk rate over 4.8%. That was a career high last year. I just mentioned that was a career low for Teoscar Hernandez. That's a career high in Sedan Rafael's very young career at 4.8%. He made excellent gains in strikeout rate. He's south of 20% now. I don't think anyone saw that coming, but he still chased a ton, so it might not stick. He's just making more weak contact. I also don't know just how much of a stolen base boost he'll be. He could be great, and he's quick, but he doesn't get on base a lot, and he's been caught a fair amount in his career, and despite 587 plate appearances last season, he only had 20 stolen bases. It's not bad, but it's not like it's not really game-changing. He'll also definitely bat pretty low in the lineup, and if the Red Sox offense is struggling, he could lose at bats. The other three outfielders are all better hitters. DH is all plugged up. That could still hypothetically open up second base, but I don't know. I don't know if the Red Sox are done yet. They just brought in Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. I don't know. There could be mouths to feed. So Sedan is a risky pick there to get some stolen bases. He could do more damage than good. But anyway, round eight, you'll notice that the same team, Manfred's Clown Posse, made up some ground here with my favorite pick in round eight. So in round eight, I already mentioned I took Gavin Williams with the first pick. Ellie De La Cruz was obviously a keeper. He was second in the eighth round. Brian Reynolds third. Matt McLain fourth. Yuck, I can't believe I didn't pick that. Nathan Eovaldi fifth. Isak Paredes sixth. Brandon Lau seventh. Munetaka Murakami eighth. Michael King ninth. Jacob DeGrom was obviously a keeper at 10. Trevor Story, because it's OBP, dropped all the way to 11th in the 8th round, and I think people are just not buying what he was selling last year. And Luis Castillo, who I'm definitely fully out on, went 12th. So there was a lot here that I think went well and went poorly. My favorite pick, just because I already mentioned the team, Manfred's Clown Posse, was Isak Paredes. I understand people have real concerns here. Paredes is super park-dependent, and he might get traded. He also had a devastating hamstring injury, and while the latest news was positive, those can come back and linger. And maybe most importantly here, is he the odd man out in Houston's infield? Like, there's Christian Walker at first. Jeremy Peña is going to be at short. We're going to have Carlos Correa at third. Like, I don't know if Isak Paredes has a spot in that Astros infield. So, that is obviously why he's falling in drafts. But you have to imagine that Houston is doing everything they can to move Christian Walker before they move Isak Paredes, right? Right now, Roster Resource does have Paredes in a short side platoon with, it looks like, in the outfield. I don't know. I could be reading that wrong. But that infield is kind of set in stone, at least at second, obviously with Altuve, who I didn't mention before, Correa at third, and Jeremy Peña shortstop. So I get it. I totally get the concern. With that said, Paredes is an on-base machine. He still currently calls Houston home. Those Crawford boxes are still there. It's the best possible place he could be. I already mentioned, I think Houston's going to try and move Walker before they move Paredes. If they move neither and Paredes loses play time, we can revisit. I just have a hard time letting Paredes slip any further. Third base is a tough position to fill. He could be amazing, like, pretty easily. It's not like he needs to make a skill change or anything. It's just purely, can the Astros figure out what they have going on in that infield so that they can get a superior player, more plate appearances. My least favorite pick, sorry to do this to my co-host, Munetaka Murakami. Chad had him pretty high on his board, and I remember talking with him about it, and I was like, hey man, like, if you like the player, take him. I don't at this point in the draft, you want to get your guy, get your guy. And he liked Murakami. I just don't know much more about him than a few things. I know that he strikes out a ton, and that was before he's ever faced a major league pitcher before. It seems like no other team in baseball wanted him. The lineup he's in is bad. And Chad already had Jose Ramirez, and he was able to get Muncy a few rounds later. I don't know if that would have changed his mind on Murakami. And there were other corner infield options. Noelvi Marte hadn't been drafted yet. Wilson Contreras hadn't been drafted yet. Jonathan Aranda was still available. So I don't know. I get it. There's a big upside there, right? Like Murakami, you know, maybe he comes in and hits 40 homers. And this will look like a great pick and I'll look like a fool. I just don't anticipate it. I really don't. Round nine. We're almost there. Let's take our second break and then we'll get into round nine. All right, folks, welcome back. Pete Ball, Keeper Cut Podcast, breaking down Keeper Cut Listener League 1. We've done rounds 1 through 8, basically reading off the names of each round and then me saying what my favorite pick of that round was and what my least favorite pick of that round was. And we're on to round 9, like I said, so let's get into that. Round 9, pick 1, Brandon Woodruff. Pick 2, Dalton Varsho. Devin Williams was a keeper there at pick 3. Noelvi Marte, 4. Elliot Ramos, 5th. Griffin Jacks, 6th. Ryan Walker, 7th. Trent Grisham, 8th. Tanner Bibee, 9th. Christopher Sanchez was kept at the 10th pick. Ranger Suarez, 11th. And then I took Wilson Contreras as the 12th pick in the 9th round. My favorite pick here is going to go to Hammock W, Team Hammock W. What a great pick. Varsho only played, so it's Dalton Varsho. Varsho only played 71 games last year. He was late returning from a 2024 rotator cuff surgery. He had a bad hamstring injury that he had to miss a few months for. He missed some games late August, early April with a hand injury. He got hit in the right hand, I believe it was. Even when he played, the on-base skills were bad. So it's a 28% strikeout rate and just a 6.3% walk rate. So there are plenty of reasons between the injuries, the previous track record, and the on-base skills as to why he would go so late. I'm not saying this is some like giant steal, but why do I like him? He had a 16% barrel rate last year. He had a better barrels per plate appearance percentage than Nick Kurtz and Yordan Alvarez. So when we talk about per plate appearance, it doesn't matter that, you know, Kurtz didn't start the year with the Athletics, and it doesn't matter that Alvarez missed so much time. It's per plate appearance. Dalton Varsho barreled the ball at a higher rate than Alvarez and Kurtz. Between August and September, when Varsho really took off, he had 12 homers over those 2 months in 171 plate appearances to go along with a 134 WRC+. So he might hurt you in OBP and he'll frustrate you with injuries potentially, but there's serious power upside this late in the draft. I think Varsho could be in store for a breakout season this year. In terms of my least favorite pick, there was like a slew of picks that I wasn't a huge fan of. There were 4 in a row. It was Elliot Ramos, Griffin Jacks, Ryan Walker, Trent Grisham. These guys were all taken in a row. Like I said, I'm not a huge fan of them. I guess Grisham can get a pass because he had great surface level 2025 production. So if you're just chasing that, I get it. Walker can get a pass because I think he definitely has that job right now. And Elliot Ramos can get a pass because for all of his warts, he had 21 homers and 85 runs in 2025. So, you know, he's still young. If we're going to give Grisham a pass, we have to give Elliot Ramos one. Griffin Jacks, though, he could easily finish the best of these 4 players. It just depends on if he gets that job. If he actually gets the job, he could be really great. And by the job, I obviously mean the closer's role. So don't get me wrong on that. I just think the most likely outcome is he's a 31-year-old reliever in a closer by committee for a middling team coming off his worst season by ERA, which was north of 4, I believe. To be fair, his ERA estimators were still really strong, but they aren't guaranteeing him a closer job. Like, they're good ERA estimators. It doesn't mean he's getting the job. Edwin Uceda is still there. If he is, in fact, the closer in Tampa Bay, again, this could be a great pick. I just don't trust that situation. I don't trust that organization. He's now a pitcher on the wrong side of 30, coming off a season on the surface that wasn't that great. You have to pay for saves, so I get it. I do. Like, you have to pay for saves. And clearly Snohomish Salmon, who made the pick, felt like he had to. I'm not that interested in Griffin Jacks at this point in time. If the Rays come out and say, oh no, he's our closer, he's our guy, then all right, then my interest level will go up. But this early in the drafts, a potential eighth inning guy, no thanks. Finally, round 10. So round 10 started with me, and I took Connor Griffin, who I'm not really going to talk about, but I think it's pretty self-explanatory why I would have taken him here. You can't wait too long. I mentioned it in the chat, and I know I was talking with Chad, and I believe Chad was sizing him up for his pick this round or in the next round. So I had to take the plunge and get Connor Griffin with the first pick in the 10th round. Then it was Anthony Santander, Jonathan Aranda, Ramon Laureano, Gleyber Torres. These are some really good picks. Dennis Santana went 6th. Okamoto 7th. Rasmussen 8th. Robbie Ray 9th. Gore 10th. Alec Burleson went 11th. And Colton Cowser went 12th. So I think overall it's a pretty strong round. My favorite pick of the round, I think, though, is Gleyber Torres to Grumpy Old Man. So that was the 5th pick in the 10th round. I was listening to Ariel Cohen on Fantasy Baseball Today a few days ago, and he was talking about how when comparing ATC projections to ADP, and ATC projections are like an aggregate of all these different projection systems, and it figures out like which projection systems are best at projecting stolen bases and which ones are the best at projecting home runs, and like kind of just combining those and coming out with all new projections based on already made projections. He was comparing them to ADP and said that essentially Gleyber Torres is the biggest steal in drafts right now based on projections versus ADP. So that might be sticking with me a little too much here, but second base is bad and Gleyber's good. He just posted his best OBP ever at 358. That came with solid counting stats kind of across the board that, you know, all projection systems seem to believe in. So it isn't like a super sexy pick, but it could be a really good one for 2026 to get your second baseman this late in the draft. Not bad there by Grumpy Old Man on Gleyber Torres. He was definitely in my queue at this point. And I think my least favorite pick of that round, here we go with Manfred's Clown Posse. I feel like I just talk about this guy's team all the time, sometimes praising it, sometimes hating on it. My apologies. And this isn't really much hate. Like, I've already chosen two of his other picks as my favorites. That was Happ and Paredes. Overall, round 10 was a strong round as well. So, like, I had to pick something. And I just went with who I think the worst pitcher was in this round, and that's Dennis Santana. His 2.18 ERA was obviously elite, but all ERA estimators have it as over a full run worse than that. All of them, over a full run worse. He doesn't have elite velocity. His velocity's fine. It's not like it's bad velocity. It's not elite. His swing and miss generating is fine. Like, his swing strike rate, I think, was over 13% last year, but that doesn't actually get strikeouts somehow. Like, he posted a paltry 7.68 K per nine last year, and it was only 8.67 the year before. So he's not really a strikeout reliever. The Pirates should be better next year. And all the posse is looking for here at this point is just for Santana to get some saves. And that makes this pick probably fine. Like, I could definitely see 15 to 20 saves, and who knows, maybe he's just a mediocre pitcher who finds himself accumulating a ton of saves. That happens literally all the time. Like, hello, Carlos Estevez. So it isn't like this is some disaster pick, but saves could be really hard for the posse to come by with his relievers being Santana. I mentioned Ryan Walker last round in the elite sit-up man, Brian Abreu, who he's already taken. So, that could work out. Ryan Walker and Santana could both end up saving 30 games by just holding on to the job. Who knows what's going on with Josh Hader's shoulder. If Brian Abreu gets the closer's job, he is an elite closer, and then I'll look like a complete fool, and this guy has completely figured out bullpens. But I'm just not a big Dennis Santana fan, and I didn't have a lot of options here. So huge thanks to everyone participating in the Keeper Cut Listener Leagues. These drafts are super fun. I hope the guys that are still going enjoy it. I'm looking forward to keeping it rolling with Listener League number 2 as well. Chad and I broke that down in the last episode, so figured I'd start up with the Roto League in this one, and maybe we'll go back and forth until the season starts breaking down these drafts. But thanks for listening. I don't know how you listened to me talk for this long if you did make it this far, and we'll be back next Monday.